This week we, it says as follows, V'yisum alman, V'yisum almon, divla taima, V'yichanu b'harei ha'avarim lefnei navo. So they traveled, this seems quite random, well, actually the part Masai has lots and lots of travelings that take place, and they travel and they encamp in a place, b'harei ha'avarim lefnei navo. So there are these places, harei ha'avarim, another place called Navo. V'yasumi harei ha'avarim, and they travel from these mountains of Avarim, v'yichanu ba'arvot Moav al Yerden Yericho. And they arrive then by the plains of Moav, which is right near Yericho, and we will pause there. The Targum translates, unatlu me almond divlataim usheru bituri divrei dikadam nivo, which, if that didn't help any of you, so I'll just tell you that it is exactly what it should have said. So as I said, the Targum probably didn't help you all that much, but I can assure you that it really did a very nice job of translating word for word. And I know that doesn't sound exceptional. Keep all this in mind, and now we're going to go backwards a little bit. We're told over here that the tribes of Reuven and Gad, and yes, we note Menashe is not involved yet, umiknerav haya levnei Reuven levnei Gad, and they had a great deal of flock of cattle, atzum ma'od, so rav, atzum ma'od, they had a great deal of it. V'yurat eretz ya'azer, v'et eretz gil'ad, and they saw some of these places over here, v'nei makom, makom mikneh, and it's a place which is wonderful for your flock to graze. V'yavu b'nei Gad uv'nei Reuven, and the order got switched there. V'yomru Moshe v'Elazar Kohen, v'nosei adale mor, and they said, quote, Atarot v'divon, v'yazar v'nimra, v'cheshbon v'il'ale, usvam unavo uva'on, and they mention all of these places, so there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 places mentioned. Ha'aretz asher hika Hashem lefnei adat Yisrael, eretz miknehi ulavdecha mikneh. So, now, when I was learning this earlier in the week, what I do first time through is I b'li neder, I go through Rashi, sorry, I go through Shtayim Mikvech Targum. You read the Chumash and you read the Targum. So I saw the Targum, which I thought was really interesting, and that source number 4 is just the same verse again. Problem was, if you look at source number 5, the Targum says, Atarot v'divon v'yazar. It's the exact same words. It's word for word the same, and nothing was translated. However, if you look at number 6, and number 6 is in fact what I had found when I was learning, it says something different. It says, Mechalelta umelabeshta bekumrin ubet nimrin ubet chushbana ubaale devava vikima vasiat bet kvurata demosha uvaon. Now, and by the way, that struck me right away. It struck me right away because it said something here. It said, bet kvurata demosha. Or a different nusach, Zveit Kvarata de Moshe, which means it translated Nevo, this place called Nevo, as the grave of Moshe. Now, the reason why that is astounding is because generally what the Targum does is it simply gives you a word-for-word precise translation. And the way to translate Nevo is as we saw up above when it had the word. Now you know why I chose up on top, source number 1, Pasuk Mem Zayin, they went Baharei Avarim Lefnei Navo. Now, Harei Avarim, it translates Biturei, that's mountain, Biturei Divrei Diktam Navo, Lefnei Navo. So, Navo is translated as Navo by the Targum, so it really struck me as strange that the Targum over here would have Moshe's name. Now, of course, I don't need to share so much, but I ran into the following problem. When I decided what I wanted to talk about, so I came home and I looked up for that verse that talked about Moshe's burial spot. Now, as I said, that's really intriguing. The reason that it's intriguing is because that's not the way the Targum normally works. So once you have an outlier, you know, you have something which is not the normal way, it becomes strange. So I come home, but I can't find it, which means when I come home and I look up the Targum, all that I find in the Targum is the other Targum, which just has the plain words. And instead of, you know, actually thinking and processing and realizing what happened, I start opening up all kinds of books and I start comparing, and there are multiple versions to this Targum, and that is strange. So, let's try again, And I want you, I'm going to explain this if this isn't clear enough to you. Let me say it one more time. There seems to be two different versions of the Targum over here, of Targum Onkelos. One of them is really interesting. This is the burial place of Moshe, which is not in the text. So that's strange. The only time the Targum, in my opinion, does this is that when it's talking about poetry. When it speaks about poetry, then it translates it non-literally, but rather what it really means. Over here, Nevo is Nevo, and as we saw in other places, it calls it Nevo, unless there's a deeper message, which I'll hold on to, and I'm going to try to come back to. But first, let me show you a little bit more. If you look at, again, source 4 is the actual verse, Atarot Divoni Azev Nimra V'Chishbon, and so on. Usavamu Nevo V'On. Source number 5 is the Targum Onkelos, which I find in some sources, which is word for word the same. It's just the Hebrew. When I look at Targum Onkelos in some places, it gives me what's number 6, including Beit Kvurata de Moshe, and Moshe's burial spot, instead of Nevo. If you look at the Targum Yonatan, you'll see it says, again, it's not exactly, but it's pretty close, Umechleltu Umedabeshta Umechavar, again, not exactly the same, Uveit Nimru, Uveit Chushbanai, Malat Maran Shiran, Uveit Kvurate de Moshe Uvaon. So you see over here is that idea, oh, this is Moshe's burial place, is mentioned in the Targum Yonatan. Those of you who had a hard time with the Targum Yonatan, you can look at, right under 7, is the Keter Yonatan, which translates it back into Hebrew. We're going to, those of you really interested in source number 8 and number 9, I found for you other examples of the Targum, and what they have is a combination of various commentaries. But, as I said, I'm a little slow sometimes, and then I, of course, remembered the Gemara. Source number 10 is the Gemara. What does the Gemara say? This is the famous source that says that you should learn Shtayim Mikra Ve'echo Targum. This is where it comes from. Amar Rav Huna, Gemara Brachot Davched. Amar Rav Huna Bar Yehuda, Amar Rabbi Ami. Lo Olam Yashlim Adam Parshiotav Imatzibur. Person should always learn the Parshiot with the Tzibur. There's a discussion what this really means. We're not going to talk about all the halachot involved in this. Shtayim Mikra Ve'echo Targum. Okay, that's the source. You should learn the text twice and the Targum once. Okay. V'yafilu, now the Gemara adds, atarot v'divon. And even when it comes to atarot v'divon. So now, why exactly did the Gemara have to stress even atarot v'divon? And those of you who didn't realize, that is our verse, atarot v'divon. So just to finish the Gemara, shekola mashlim parshiotav imatzibur marchilu yamavu shnatav. This is a good tiding in order to get a long life. It's a good sign. It's a good thing. And so on. I look at Rashi in 11. V'afilu atarot divyon. Rashi writes, she'ein bo targum. There is no targum on this. So now if I go back and I look at source number 4, which is the verse, and source number 5, and I see they're in fact identical. Why are they identical? Because Rashi just said there's no Targum. But I still have to do Shtayim Mikra Ve'echer Targum. How do I do Shtayim Mikra Ve'echer Targum when there's no Targum? So what did the Gemara say you do on this verse of Atarot V'divon? You do it anyway, even though, according to Rashi, there's no Targum. So there's no Targum, so what do? I read the verse twice, and I read the Targum once, even though the Targum is just the verse. So in the end, this is math. Mathematical, I read the verse 3 times. And that's what emerges from Rashi. Now, the problem over here is that not everyone agrees. If you look at source 14, Tosfot HaRash, he writes, V'afilu atarot b'divon, pirish Rashi, ein bo targum, v'kasha. He says, if that's the case, why go all the way to the middle of Bamidbar? There are earlier verses that have names of the sons of Yaakov, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and so on, the beginning of Shemot, their verses with just their names. So why did, and there's no Targum on those, it's just the words in Hebrew, so why not use those examples? And that's a pretty good point. V'nira d'nakan atarot v'divon, and it says, it seems to be that these were chosen specifically, l'fi sheyesh nuscha shekatav bem Targum. Because he says that some people do have the Targum. Now, you don't know how happy this made me. It made me happy because I realized that my own confusion, that I'm looking and I find the Targum, I'm not the first one to find this. The Tosfot HaRash, who lived some 700 years ago, he found the same thing. He found some people have a Targum that has no Targum, just straight Hebrew, the Pasuk a third time. Well, some people actually have a Targum. Now, this is still somewhat mysterious, and his first question was really good. Why is this the prototypical example, and why not use that earlier verse? Which means normally what you should do is pick the very first time that the verse is used where there is a, well, the very first time that you are missing a targum and just have straight Hebrew. So if this sounds also very esoteric, it's not, and it's become a lot clearer, hopefully, in a couple of moments. The Maariv Chiyot writes, and this is much more recently, this is within the last 250 years, and he says, look in the Rush, and he writes, Mashma shelafanav hayu girsa shana onkelos. He goes, and by the way, we saw that in the Rush, we understood that there must be two different versions of onkelos. V'nira mizeh degamal kra atarot v'divon lo yatargum. He says, it seems to me that there really wasn't originally a Targum here. The Targum just left it in Hebrew, but somebody felt, you know what, let's fill it in. There's another Targum, there's another Aramaic translation that has this verse, so let's just fill in what's missing. By the way, Rashi didn't believe that. Rashi believed that in this case, you don't use the other Targum. The only Targum he used was onkelos. Now, I just have to say something about this, and the only people I think will hear more about this is if I do give a shiur on Shabbat on some of the halacha involved in this. So I'm just going to say this really, really briefly. When it comes to this idea, the custom or the mitzvah, whatever you want to put it, of learning Shtayim Mikra Echad Targum, there are a lot of people today who don't use Targum. And maybe the original reason to do Targum is because that was the spoken language. So therefore, the average person knew Targum in Aramaic is what they spoke. They knew it better than Hebrew. They want everyone to learn the Parsha. So how do you learn the Parsha? So you go over twice to familiarize yourselves with the Hebrew, and then to learn Targum. I'll be honest. When I read the Targum, I learn Aramaic. I don't learn what the Pasuk says. I learn the Aramaic, except for the few cases that it actually really adds something like this potential over here with the grave of Moshe. But Rashi insisted that you only do Targum Onkelos because presumably Targum Onkelos has some kind of a special level and you don't do something else. The Rush, who said you do something else, while Rashi says you don't do something else. So again, I just want to pause there for a second. The Smag, again, early general school of Tosfot, he asked, he said, hold it, there are other things that we can learn that will teach us better. Maybe we should be doing those. He says, that's what he asked to his teacher. So I just want to point out the irony. The Tur, the son of the Rush, says, you're allowed to use Shtayim Mikveh Echad Targum, you can use Rashi. I don't believe Rashi himself agreed. Why didn't Rashi agree? Because Rashi said only the Targum you can use, and you shouldn't even use a different Targum. And in a case where the Targum doesn't have an explanation, use the verse three times. Because Rashi was very specific that the only way of doing this is this Targum. That's the only way to do it. And people who use Rashi are doing something which Rashi himself felt was not appropriate. By the way, there's a deeper issue over here, and that is that there are those who will tell you that the Targum is something, so a number of the Gaonim said this, the Targum is something which has Ruach HaKodesh to it. Now, many of you have heard along the way, oh, Rashi has Ruach HaKodesh. Now, what all this means is obviously beyond the scope of this. If you're interested in this discussion, you'll send me a note, and I will send you a really interesting essay dealing with the background of certain books that were ascribed or claimed that they were written in Ruach HaKodesh, and those who doubted it, and what happened afterwards. So as I said, if you're interested, I'm happy to send you an article. But let's get back to our issue. And I want to read one more commentary over here, and then we'll be able to get back into this. One of the commentaries, source 17, the very end of the Gemara, right in the back of the book there, is the Chiddush of Elazar Moshe Horovitz. And he writes about this translation, Uveit Kvurta de Moshe, which was found in some copies of the Unkelos. Vizeh, Eivshalach Nisbid Vreim, da Azaya Kayam. He goes, you can't say that. You can't say that what it meant was the grave of Moshe. It couldn't have been the grave of Moshe. Moshe was still alive. What he's saying is that whoever translated this, as their request was, we want to stay on this side by the grave of Moshe, is saying something which is absolutely incorrect Vatargum enu elokim midrash pa'alma. And the claim, or to insert over here, the grave of Moshe is a midrash, but it can't be, because that was certainly not the case. Now, I'm going to spend much of the time today exploring the very opposite contention of what Rabbi Elazar Moshe Horovitz says. Did we all understand what he said? He's saying is that when they asked, made the request, we want to stay over here on this side, he said it's preposterous to claim that they actually said we want to stay here with Moshe. But what if that's really is what they did say? Okay, let me give you a bad example. Or maybe a good example, but I think it's a bad example. This week it was announced that those who were planning on going to Uman for Rosh Hashanah can't go because of the coronavirus. They don't want people to go there. Now, I can ask you an innocent question. Why in the world would anybody want to travel to Uman anytime, especially Rosh Hashanah? I mean, you all realize there's a total absurdity in that. You realize that Rehov HaUman in Tel Aviv has more Kedusha than all of Uman does. And why? Because that's Tel Aviv. I mean, that's certainly the case. I know that those of you will be shaking your head at me, but it's okay. And you'll tell me, well, of course they want to go, because that's where Rav Nachman from Breslov is buried. Still, I'll say that Eretz Yisrael had more Kedusha than Uman does, and I don't believe that anybody can debate that point. What if they felt that they want to stay on the other side of the Jordan, because that's where Moshe is going to be buried? What if their sense was that there is some kind of holiness, or even if not holiness, some kind of fidelity to Moshe, because this is where Moshe is, which means, is this claim of this other, we'll call it our phantom Targum, which is also the Targum Yerushalmi, that says when they make the request, they say, we want to stay in by the kever of Moshe. Now, of course, Rav Horovitz there was correct by saying, you can't say the kever of Moshe. Moshe is not dead yet. But do they know that that's where he's going to be buried? Has that already been stated? And the answer to that question is yes. So let's take a look, because this was, not only is it yes, but this we should have read last week. Source 18, Ravna benot Slavchad, ben Chefer, ben Galad, ben Machir, ben Menashe, Meshchot Menashe, ben Yosef. Okay, they make their request and they say that we also want to inherit, our father's not alive. Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lemor, and God said, Ken benot Slavchad, Dovrot, they speak the truth, they correct. Naton titein lemachuzat nachala, betoch achei avihem, you should give them some land, inheritance, v'havarta et nachalat avim lahem, and their father's portion should go over the word. I want you to pay attention to the word v'havarta, which is, of course, the reason why it's in bold. And it will be given over to them. Now, I don't want to get overly technical again. What does the word nachala mean, and what does the word yerusha mean? Shall I use those words again? What is a nachala, and what is a yerusha? So, I could say that a Yerusha is an inheritance, but then I'll say a Nachalat is an inheritance. And maybe you'll tell me the difference is that a Nachalat is when you inherit property. Maybe that's the difference between them. But I will also say there may be a philosophical difference between them. There are cases by Yerusha, and I'm going to say this as a philosophical and a halachic question. When a son inherits from their father, and whether, for example, the eldest son is supposed to receive a double portion, that's a Yerusha. I don't use the word Nachala then, that's a Yerusha. So is it that the father's property moves over to the son, or is it that the son move over and is now in the place of the father? Did that question make any sense? Does the property move over from father to son, or does the son move over and now he takes the role of the father in terms of this particular property? And I'll say it again, it may sound very, very similar, but it's not. And I think the word Yerusha will mean that you're taking the place of the father, and the word Nachala means that it moves over to the child. I just want to stress this point now, because if we go back and look at the other words that were used over here, it says, Vahavartem et Nachalato Levito. You're going to move the Nachala over to the daughter. mean it gets moved. The nachala is moved. Not that they have taken their place. No, there's a nachala, which means essentially the laws of Yerusha, as such, the girls would not have won that argument. But when it came to the laws of nachala, they did win the argument, which may sound like a subtle point, but I'm going to leave it for now. If we continue a little bit further, I want to move down to verse 12, Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, ale el har ha'avarim hazeh. Now, this is one of the places that we've been interested about, Har Ha'avarim. It was there in the very beginning in our first source, the Echanu Baharei Ha'avarim Lefnei Nevo. So Avarim and Nevo are somehow connected. And even though it sounded like I was saying something really random, it's not as random as it may have sounded. I want to go back now again. Moshe was told by God over here in this verse. Let's do it again. Pasuk Yud Bet in source number 18. Vayomer Shem Moshe, ale el Har Ha'avarim hazeh. I want you to go up there and take a look at the land. You're going to go up and then you're going to die. As your brother died. Now, something happens over here, which, I need to explain. Immediately following this, by the way, notice all the words we're familiar with, just the sequence is different. Vayedaber Moshe el Hashem lemor. Moshe says to God, "Yifkod Hashem Elokei Ruchot l'chol basar ish leida. You can't leave the people without a leader. Asher yetzei lefneim, asher yavo lefneim, who's going to go out and lead them and so on. So, again, follow the sequence. The Benot Zlavchad asks for their inheritance, if that's the right word, their nachala. Right afterwards, Moshe is told to go up to the mountain and take a look and see the land. And then Moshe says to God, well, we need a leader. Well, of course you need a leader, because Moshe was just now told that he's going to die. And let's take a look at Rashi now in source number 20. Aleir haravarim, lama nismach alachan. Why is it written here? Kevin shemar kadosh baruch hu naton diteh lahem. Once God said, give to the daughters of Tzlavchad what they asked for. Amar otitziva makom lahanchil. Shema hutra gzera v'kenes la'aretz. That once they started talking about inheritance, Moshe starts listening carefully. He goes, maybe nonetheless, if I'm involved in dividing of the land, maybe that's going to be part of my role. Maybe I'm going in as well. Davar acher, kevin shenichnas Moshe lenachalat b'nei Gad uv'nei Reuven, samach v'amar. This is so interesting because that hasn't happened yet. Once Moshe walked into the property of Gad and Reuven, he was overjoyed. Kimidoma Shutarli Nidri. He goes, that's it. Maybe I can go in as well. Why? Because he's now in the land of Israel. Why is the land of Israel? Because B'nai Gad and Reuven asked for it. Okay, well, we're getting a little technical over here. In this week's parsha, one of the things that we're going to learn about is how to cancel vows. A vow could be canceled a couple of different ways. In this case, Moshe was told he can't go into the land of Israel. Remember, I questioned what happens by inheritance. Does the property move one way, or does the person move the other way? So over here, Moshe couldn't go into Eretz Israel. Now, what happens when B'nai Gad and Reuven ask for this property? Eretz Israel now moves over there. So now if Eretz Israel has moved over there to the other side of the Jordan, now Moshe is in Eretz Israel. If Moshe is in Eretz Israel, so then maybe the whole thing is canceled. And that's what Rashi says over here, which means Moshe feels that maybe there is nonetheless a possibility. There's another Rashi that I wanted you to see, but I'm afraid that I may have skipped it. The other comment of Rashi, which I have skipped over here, is that Moshe in this place says to himself, maybe I can ask for my children for inheritance. Again, let's just follow the sequence. The daughters of Tzlavchad ask, they want their father's nachala. They want the inheritance. Then what happens? God says to Moshe, go up to the mountain. Then what happens? Moshe says, you can't leave the people without a leader. So Rashi says that Moshe was hinting, or maybe trying to get God to say, okay, your son will take over for you. And then God says, no, Yeshua is taking over. So what has happened here in this sequence, in this area, is Moshe goes up to Har Ha'avarim. He's told he's not going any further. Take a look, because you're going to die over here. Nonetheless, that first part of the Rashi we just now saw was, well, hold it, maybe the whole thing is canceled. I'm not going to say by a fluke, but by interesting movement, and that is because now this is the land of Israel. Now I'm in the land of Israel, so therefore the whole vow has to have been canceled. But, and by the way, part of, I think, the more interesting issue that we're not going to discuss is the other side of the Jordan really the land of Israel in every single way. So, for example, in the Mishnah of Bikurim, there's an argument if you bring Bikurim from the other side of the Jordan. And one opinion is, no. Why not? Because it's not called Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. It's not the land with flows of milk and honey. And the Bikurim needs to come from a place with, which is that land, which means that's only on this side of the Jordan. It becomes part of Israel. The only question is it 100% Israel or not? But it's not enough for Moshe to be able to go in. But as I'm saying is, we're getting to the core of something which we're still having a hard time putting our fingers on or identifying properly. So let me try to explain it now a little bit better. And I want to utilize a commentary. Here, just look at the Bechor Shur first, 21, Alei Haravarim, Lefi Shadiber Lamala B'Parshat Nachala, Givba Ish Ki Yamut. So he said, the Bechor Shur is saying, yeah, you're not connected to the daughters of Tzlavchad who are able to inherit, you're connected to the guy who died, Ish Ki Yamut. So Machkan Mitasha Moshe. The Ramban says, Alei El Haravarim Hazeh, go climb up to this mountain. Shema Har Hazeh Har Nevo. He goes, oh, which mountain is this? This is Har Nevo. By the way, let me now point out to you, our confusion that we had from the very beginning today is Har Harei HaAvarim Lefnei Nevo, and then the place that we were not, Unevo, in source number 3, that was the place where the Targum said, oh, what is Nevo? That is the place where the Kever of Moshe is, which means Moshe is told to climb up to the mountain, Haravarim, and Ramban just now told us, oh, if you don't realize where we are, you don't realize what this place is, he says, this is Nevo. Now, of course, how does he know this? So hold on for a second, and we'll look back at the Ramban, but just look at a couple of verses a little later on. In source number 25, which is Devarim Lama Dalet, Vayal Moshe Bavot Moav El Har Nevo, Rosh HaPiskah, Ashel Pnei Richo, that's where Moshe climbed up, was Har Nevo. Source number 6, which is in Hazinu, Aleil Har Avarim Hazeh Har Nevo. The instructions that Moshe received was, climb up to Har Avarim Hazeh Har Nevo. So therefore, is it Har Avarim? Is it Nevo? Which one is it? And there seems to be some overlap. Now, it could be that there's a range of mountains called the Avarim, which is most likely Pshat, and there could be a specific mountain called, or mountaintop called Nevo, which, as I'll say again, may very well be Pshat. Let's go back instead to the Ramban. Alei al Haravirim Hazeh. Shema Harazeh Har Nevo. The name of the mountain is Har Nevo. Kashir Pirash B'Seder Azino, as it says, and we just looked there, in Dvarim Lamed, Uvezot HaBracha, and we just looked there, Avikurot Har Avarim Neshehu Al Ma'abarot HaYardein. So he's saying that there is something called Ma'abarot HaYarden over there, and we show Avru El Eretz Canaan. This is the place that you cross over, the Ma'avar. The Moshe went up to the place right where you cross into the Jordan, El Eretz Canaan, Kasher Amarkan, Asher Al Pnei Yerecho, Visham Avru Et Yarden, and that's where they passed over. Kamosha Ne'emar Va'am Alumine Yarden Vechnu Bigalad B'Tzemin Mizrach Yericho. So the people will cross over here, and the most that Moshe will get is that he will look over here, and this is what he will see. And then he will die there. Let's take a look at the Kli Yakar. Those of you who don't remember, the Kli Yakar was a rabbi in Prague around the time of the Maharal. Alei el har avarim hazeh. Tzarchian. Lomenis mecha parsha zulachan. Why is that written over here? Because as you saw, it's referenced again later on. It's referenced, you know, at the end of Devarim. Why is it mentioned here? V'lama l'kara l'har Nevo har avarim. And why is this mountain called Har Nevo, also called Har Avim? Again, which is it? U'kisha'amar Moshe yifkod elu he'aruchot isha l'ayda l'ma l'bikesh n'chil suarato l'vanav. Okay, and he asks, again, Rashi is the one that he did ask. V'korav elai lomar b'zeh. And he says it's This is what I want to say. L'fi she'nemar l'mala ve'he'evartem et nachalato levito. The word ha'avar is the word that goes with the nachala, when something moves over to someone else. Pirush Rashi, she'dekach nemar v'avartem l'lam dechach she'kom she'enu maniach ben l'yorsho, Kodesh Baruch Hu malei alav avra. It goes, this is where it passes over. V'yesh l'dek l'yorsho v'lamali ha'velei loma kom she'enu maniach ben. There are some times that a son is not worthy to inherit, and what is he referring to? He's referring to Moshe's children. Or, by the way, for that matter, the Rambam writes this regarding kings. If a king has a son, and the son does not have Yirat Shamayim, the Rambam writes quite clearly, based on the verses themselves, the son has no right to inherit. By the way, who decides this? So apparently the Sanhedrin decides. Even though you thought it was a monarchy, it's a monarchy, but people decide, and who gets to have that role? Which means that sometimes it moves over, sometimes there is this ha'avara, but sometimes what you have moves over to somebody else in not the way that you want it. So over here, what the Kli Yakar is pointing out is that the key word over here, and I want to, before I go any further, I want to go backwards a little bit. I want you to look at the verses that we were referring to in Source 18. Ve'evartim et nachalat avihim. Ve'evartim et nachalato. The possession gets moved over to this other person. And over here, Hara Avarim is where Moshe's leadership is going to be passed over to somebody else. What is immediately the next section? Right, Moshe says, but hold it, who's going to get the leadership? And God says, V'yom Hashem Moshe, kach l'cha Yoshua ben Nun. Okay, Yoshua. And he's the one who's going to be able to receive it. The Kli Yakar then continues, and he says, let's go a little bit further in Source 23, V'chein pirash Moshe adavar shenemar, v'yit'aber Hashem bi lema'anchem. I'm not, v'samach v'tzavet Yeshua. So let me explain what he's talking about, and we're going to take a look in Source number 24. V'etchanan el Hashem be'eta hilimor. Moshe pleaded with God. When did Moshe plead with God? He pleaded with God. Hashem Elokim, right? Atachilot l'rot et abdecha d'galachot yadcha, and so on and so forth. Ebrana, notice the same word, let me cross over, v'era et ha'aretz ha'tova, asher be'eva yarden. Let me cross over. V'yit'aber Hashem bi. Now you notice the same word, v'yit'aber, but now God took away from me and passed it over to someone else. Za'avar l'mishu acher, l'ma'anchem, v'lo shama elai. V'yomar shem elai, rav lach, al tosit aver od b'davar zeh. Alei rosh ha'piska, instead go to the mountain, v'say necha yama v'tzfon v'teman u'mizracha, u'rei b'necha. Ki lo ta'avar, the same word again, ki lo ta'avar te'yardin hazeh. V'tzavet Yoshua. So now you realize that this is all in the same context. V'tzavet Yoshua v'chazkeu v'amseyu, ki hu ya'avor, he's the one who's going to cross over. So, v'hu yanchil oto al aretz asher tireh, v'neshev begai mul beit pa'or. Rather, you're going to stay over here, which will be in this place next to pa'or. Now, pa'or, of course, we all know, is this place of idolatry. It's this place where they worshipped pa'or. If we look when Moshe dies in Source 25, and that's what we read quickly, Vayal Moshe may arvot Moav, right? El Har Nevo, Rosh HaPiskah, and that's when we're told that he looks. Vayal Moshe Mzot Haaretz, and so on. Vayamat Shem Moshe, verse Hey, Eved Hashem Eretz Moav, Api Hashem, V'yikbor Oto Bigai Be'eretz Moav, Mul Beit Pa'or. So that description is given again. So now, let's catch up what we're up to and how we got here. We started with this strange Targum, which, as I said, may or may not be a fictitious Targum. Maybe it was never translated, which is what we still need to deal with. And this funny Targum says that this place, Nevo, oh, that's the kever of Moshe. Question, is that what the children of Reuven and God, or God and Reuven, asked for? Did they just ask because there's lots of great land over here, or did they say, we want to stay near the kever of Moshe? Which means if that Targum is true, or when I say true, if the Targum correctly identifies what they're saying, I'm going to say this all over again. it is already known that Moshe is not crossing over. It's already known that Moshe is going to be staying on this side of the Jordan. It's already known that Moshe's kever is going to be over here. When they make this request, is that part of their request as well? Or they're saying that, you know what, maybe Uman and the kever of Rabbi Nachman is pretty good, but the kever of Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, that doesn't get better than that. And even though we don't know exactly precisely where it is, maybe that was part of their request. By the way, I'm going to say it again. That Targum completely changes the complexion of the request. I'm not going to say that it takes away any questions. I'm not going to say that therefore they're wonderful Zionists. I'm not going to say therefore that they were following what God had promised to Avram. I'm not going to say that there's some kinds of issues over here, but I'm going to say it again. It does change the complexion of the request if that's really what they're saying. And this Lazar Horovitz, who quickly pushed that aside and said, what are you talking about? That's a midrash. Moshe's still alive. You can't speak about Moshe's grave. Well, you can speak about Moshe's grave if God said, you're not going over. You're going to die here the same way that your brother died on this side of the Jordan. You're staying over here. So maybe that really is part of the request. Now, let me just go a little bit further with this, because the one thing that we kept on seeing now is that Moshe's grave is going to be near or in proximity or close to or overseeing this place, which is called Or. So let's just look at what Rashi says about that. Rashi in source number 27. Bekvaroto, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo. God buried him. Vishmolom, who kavar datzmo? Two different opinions. Rabbi Shmuel said he buried himself. We'll skip a little bit in that same Rashi. Mul Beit Pa'or, that he was buried across from this place called Pa'or. It's not an accident that Moshe is buried there. This was prepared for a long time. I'm not going to deal with the question of was it known in the 6 days of creation the Jews would sin there, but it says that, you know, just like Tshuva was created before the world, in the 6 days of creation, Moshe's grave is there. L'chaper amasei pa'or. It seems to be that Moshe needed to be buried there. Now, let me go back to something which I skipped over and we did not read. All the way back in one of the early sources, I stopped too soon. And this, as I'll say, may be part of the exact same issue, but again, we're not realizing it yet. In source number 3, Perek Lamed Bet, that is where Reuven and Gad, they come and they make the request, and that's where this verse was with all those proper names, and that is where either there is or there isn't a Targum. And at the very end, we're told something, or towards the end, we're told something interesting. Pasuk Lamed Ched, ve'et nevo ve'et bal ma'on mesubat shem ve'et sivma v'yikru b'shemot et shemot ha'arim asher banu. Now, if that wasn't clear, these places, and these are the same places that we've been talking about, it says something happened with their names, and now let's go back and take a look at what Rashi says about this. This is Rashi in source number 29. Ve'nevo ve'et bal ma'on musubat shem. Nevo u'bal ma'on shmot avodah zarahim. V'yu ha'amorim korim arehim, ha'emorim korim arehim al shem avodah zar shalahim. He said each one of these places were places of idolatry. Uvnei Ruvain hesebu et shmam. It says muspat shem. They changed over the name l'shemot acherim. V'zeu muspat shem. That's what it means that they muspat, that they changed over the name. Nevo ba ma'on muspat l'shem acher. These cities, they changed them to a different name. So now I'm going to now finally come back and explain what's going on over here and hopefully put all of this together. In source number 30, Rabbeinu Bachaye writes, Atarot v'divon, and that was back on the verse that, almost the verse we started with. Me'eretz Yichon, melech ha'mori hayu, v'yesh mehem, mekomot shel avodah zarah, shemorim ovdim sham, v'him nevo ba'ma'on. And you realize it's exactly what Rashi had said. Shekatuv, and he brings a verse from Yeshayahu. He only brings part of it. I brought the whole thing over here. Korea bel kores nevo, hayu atzbehim l'chaya v'labema, Nisotechem amusim masali aifa. Bel is bowed. Nebo is cowering. Their images are burdened for beasts and cattle. the things you would carry in possession are piled as a burden on tired beasts. I don't know why the O is capitalized, but it was. What the verse is saying is that all of these places are places full of things that people worship. They're full of idolatry. Now, the Targum Onkelos HaPasuk HaZeh, and this is the fictitious Onkelos, Michalelta umalabeshta v'kum beit nimru beit chushbena ubal divna v'siyana bekvura demoshe uva'on hiskir bektzat lashon beit. He goes, notice this Onkelos translates this as beit. Right, there's a beit along the way. All these beits in this verse, beit. He says hiskir b'tam lashon bayit. And he brings an example from Gemara. Those of you learning Daf Yomi should have come across it fairly recently. Bein Nitzrafi, Bein Avidam, Bein Durabi. Again, if you want to see that Gemara, it's down over here. Boimine Yosi ben Chanin, Rabbi Abao, Hane Sifri de Bein Avidan. What is the status of the books in this place? It was a place of probably of Christianity, actually, from the context. Matzilino Tomnevi like Alo. If you have a Christian Bible which has the names of God in it, do you save it on Shabbat or not save it on Shabbat? So that's the question. Rav Lo Azil Lebe Avidan. Rav would not go by there. Bekolshkein Lebe Nitzrafi would not go to these places. Shmuel Lebe Nitzrafi. What the reason he brought this Gemara is to show Be Avidan, Lebe Nitzrafi, and so on. These are all terms which are used for idolatry. And therefore, essentially, what he was telling us, let's continue. Ubnei Ruvain kishabanu atelu karu otam bishmot acherim. He called them in different names. Vizel shekatuv muspat shem kishanu shmam li karei b'shem acher. And they changed their names. Why? Leman lo yazkir shem avoda zara. In order not to mention the name of idolatry. And therefore the rabbi said, he's going back to the Gemara we saw in the beginning, you should always go over the Torah twice together with the Targum. Why did it mention these examples and not, as we saw the Tosfot Rush ask regarding why not the names of the sons of Yaakov? These are names of idolatry. Shelo Tomar, that you're not allowed to say. Kevin Shetargumu Perisha Katuv, Ein Lanu Latargum Aposukaze, Kiyesh Bozi Kamarna Vodazara. Vyokain Bocha Chamim Lomer Shaaf Aposukaze, Ruilaskir Shelo Lahakelbo. Vitzurich Shetitkonen Ki Od Bibinyan Arimelu Uvishamatam Inyan Nistar. Okay, let me explain what it is that he said and what is the world is going on over here. Because it's all connected. And maybe it was too subtle and we missed it, but it's all connected. Why does Moshe have to be buried over here? I didn't ask the question, why can't Moshe go to Israel? That's a different question. I asked, why does Moshe need to be buried here? So Rashi told us, and Chazal tell us, and the Pasuk really indicates it, because Moshe needs to be buried near Peor. Why near Peor? Peor was a place of idolatry, and it had power, and it caused the Jews to sin, and Jews sinned there, and Jews died there. Therefore, Moshe needed to be buried in this place of all of this. I don't want to even use the word heresy, of all of this idolatry, to elevate it and to be able to turn this negative place into holiness. By the way, if any of you actually do know why Rav Nachman of Breslov is buried in Uman, it is for the exact same reason, is that there was a massacre over there, and there were many people who, in his opinion, were part of the Haskalah, and he felt that there were people who died, and there needed to be some kind of elevation of the souls over there. And in Rav Nachman's understanding, it's not all that different from Moshe Rabbeinu being buried over here. And therefore, when I use that as the analogy, that was absolutely intended. But we're going back now to, again, I'm saying there's this combination of both issues. All of these places are places of idolatry. And again, let's be honest right now. Every place in the Middle East was idolatry. The whole world was full of idolatry. To a very great extent, what Judaism is an attack and a polemic against idolatry and trying to destroy idolatry. When we enter the land of Israel, we're going to have to get rid of all the places of idolatry. These people who are staying in this particular area will now have to eradicate idolatry. And we're so insensitive to this and that's where Rabbeinu Chai was pointing out, the very names of each and every one of these places are a name, is a name of idolatry, which means they're going to have to get rid of the idolatry. How do they get rid of the idolatry? By giving it new names. They're going to have to destroy the idolatry. Again, if there's any physical idolatry, they have to get rid of it. But they're going to have to get rid of the idolatry by getting rid of the names. Moshe is buried there for that very same reason, in order to counter the powers of the idolatry. The reason why there's no Targum, and again, this was a little bit subtle, is there is actually a law in Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara, that you're not allowed to mention by name idolatry. It's based on a verse. You're not allowed to mention names of idolatry. The exception to this rule is, unless it's written in the Chumash, which means when we read that the Jews worship Al-Por, I'm not obligated to skip that phrase. No, I read that phrase. The Jews worship Baal-Peor. But if Baal-Peor was not mentioned in the Chumash, then I should not mention it by name. It gives it value. So now, in this case, what happened? There's no Targum on this. And rather, why did it have to stress that you're allowed to say it three times? It's because it's problematic mentioning these various names, because each one of these names is idolatry. Nonetheless, just think about it. When we read it, what are we doing? We're taking this idolatry and we're turning it into Torah. Our very reading of this, when we learn or reading it on Shabbat, is taking something which was idolatry in context and turning it into Torah. What do the sons of Reuben and Gad do? They change the names because they need to count the idolatry. Now, finally, getting back to our larger point, why is Moshe buried over here? He's buried by this place that the Jews worship a lot of idolatry. That means that Moshe is the ultimate leader of the Jewish people. His generation doesn't enter into the land. What was his job? His job was to take the Jews out to the land of Israel. But the people who he took out all died in the desert. The people who took out, they didn't make it. So therefore Moshe, this ultimate leader, stays with his people. And the worst of it, towards the end, were these people who worship the Pa'or. Because it's one thing, for that matter, you say the golden calf, the Pa'or. It's one thing, the Chayt of the Meraglim, we don't want to go to the land of Israel. It's another thing, the people who worship the Pa'or right when they're getting close. Moshe stays with those people. Which is an amazing statement. Part of the teaching in this week's parsha is that if somebody killed by accident, then they go off into an Ir Miklat. If you have a chance, you can take a look. Rabbi Sachs wrote a wonderful piece about his teacher, Rabbi Rabinovich, reflecting on this law that if a student goes into Galut, then the teacher should go with him because you need a teacher. How can a student be left alone? But don't you realize you learned this from Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu stays on the other side because his students need him. But you'll say, but they're not alive, and neither is he. And now I go back to the request of Bnei Reuven, Bnei Gad, and they say, we want to stay over here. I find this comment of this, I'm sorry to say, this fictitious or imaginary Targum, which is not Unkelus, saying that they want us to, and it changes the name. It's so interesting. Navo is Avodah Zarah. And it changes Navo into the kever of Moshe Rabbeinu. But that's the whole purpose over here. The whole purpose was to take the Avodah Zarah and turn it into something positive. And they're saying, no, that's what we want. We want to take Navo and turn this into the kever of Moshe. That's the place. And they're going to change the name very simply. We want to stay with Moshe, which means, I'm going to say it again, it changes the complexion of what they ask for. And it really identifies much more what the mission is. The mission is to get rid, to eradicate idolatry. But unfortunately, there are a whole bunch of other Jews who are buried over here. There are a whole bunch of other Jews who died over here worshipping Pa'or. So Moshe is not given permission to leave them. Moshe's told, go take a look, and he's not going to be over. He's not going to move over. Rather, his leadership is over, is going to move over to somebody else. And that's why this place has two different names. It's Nebo and Har HaAvarim. It's this mountain that things get moved over. Moshe's not able to move. His leadership is going to move. Moshe's leadership is going to move over. Hit Aberbi. He's going to say, Etchanan, I prayed all these times, and Hitaberbi, my leadership was moved over to Yeshua. That's the exact same context. But Moshe, he's going to stay with his people. Moshe is this ultimate leader, is going to stay. But it's beautiful that Navo, which was idolatry, will be turned into the kever of Moshe. That's exactly the point. So I'm saying within this little phrase of the Targum, there is so much theology, and it's so rich, and it's so easy to miss, especially if in your Chumash it doesn't even say it, especially if in your Chumash all that it says is Navo, and then you'll learn a bunch of verses later, okay, then they change the name anyway. But over here in this other Targum Onkelos, I'll say it again, this either imaginary or this Targum Yerushalmi, which in some Chumashim they put it in its place, they changed the name of it already. They took it away. And they turned it into the Kever of Moshe, which means they took something which was an area of idolatry and they turned it into a place which was so holy. And if somebody ever imagined that, I'll say it again, that the Kever of Rabbi Nachman and Uman is something which is holy, just imagine the Kever of Moshe Rabbeinu. And if that's what they were asking for, then maybe it's a little different, and maybe we should judge them a little differently than we originally, you know, would have wanted to judge them. Maybe that really was an expression of what was in their hearts, and maybe it's not such a bad thing to judge Jews favorably. As a Zionist, it's, you know, we have a hard time. If you're really a Zionist, then of course two sides of the Jordan, a Jabotinsky Zionist, then you get both sides of the Jordan over here. But as I said, it's the theology over here which is significant. It's the idea completely of taking idolatry and turning it into Torah. And that's actually what we do when we read this particular verse. Whether you read the verse three times or whether you read it twice and the third time you read about the Kever of Moshe being in that verse. Everybody stay healthy. Have a good Shabbat. If you have questions, I'm glad to try to take them.